You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family-owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB, the CV. Copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
Can you imagine if this thing happened on my phone yesterday? Can you imagine?
Mike Ryan is theorizing, Chris Cody, that his phone exploded simply from using it so much as a reporter, that it just couldn't handle the amount of usage it had over the last month just making calls to sources.
By that math, Adam Schefter must get a new phone every week.
I don't know how they do it. I honestly don't. They must be miserable to be married to. They really must be. There's no life. There's no life for you when you've got that much stuff going on. It was on one beat. And I've got nothing left.
I don't think that the average person understands the insanity, the pathology that people like Jay Glazer and Adam Schefter and Adrian Wojnarowski, the insanities that their lives are, because it gets consumed at every moment. Because once you've got a network here, Mike, and I'm sure you're learning this, once people realize that you're one of the information brokers, and I didn't see any of this coming, right? Netflix guards its information. Greg, if you're going to get here late and just start opening things, can you not do it near the microphone? Can you do it?
The microphone is actually off. He's just that loud.
Okay. If you could just, if you're going to be late, if you could come in and not
a little
just
subtlety,
jostle maybe and interrupt everything and play defense against everything,
you know,
we're doing.
Your son and I were talking. I can't remember the last time you showed up here on time. I just can't.
It's early, 8, very early.
Same for all of us.
Everyone has the same call time.
Yeah.
And yet, pretty routinely, the same people are here on time.
We could see who makes the effort to leave a little early.
Witty, what is the punishment that you're enduring today that you are here in a bow tie and a, or did you just decide to dress
just
this?
Just how I come to work. No, I'm doing the Foxy Roxy, okay, which is dressed like I'm in a 1920s speakeasy.
You look like the accountant for the Peaky Blinders.
It is. And also, I believe, a 1920s serial killer. People already think that you have some tendencies, some Dexter-type tendencies in terms of being real neat about the way that you kill people.
Oh, that's the single biggest thread on Mystery Crate, is that Chris Whittingham is indeed a serial killer.
He's got some interesting traits, always trying to be helpful, always super neat, and always keeps severed heads in the freezer.
Like, you imagine if he did kill someone, he would clean it up real, like, you'd never know.
The only thing that was murdered this morning, forgive me, Dan, was the bow tie that came with the costume. I'm wearing a vest and a timepiece. I'll have to lift it out of my vest pocket here so you can see the timepiece. So it came with a bow tie, and I kid you not, I sat down in my car and it just fell apart. So I actually had to go to the reserve bow tie, which is one that I just have, in case I need a bow tie.
Who has a bow tie?
Okay.
Flip on?
Put it on the poll, please, Chris Cody. Billy Gill's on vacation this week. Put it on the poll. Do you own a bow tie? Yes or no? I want to get into some of the details and mechanics on what's happening next at the University of Miami, and we will get into whether Joe Brady coming here is a real thing. We will get into whether the wacky strength coach with the mustache coming here is a real thing. It's a foregone conclusion that Alex Mirabal is coming, because he's always in the pocket of Mario Cristobal wherever it is he goes.
Yeah, he committed before Mario. he was on the staff. Manny Diaz saw him, and he's like, what are you doing here? He's just like, head start.
He was taken off the road yesterday recruiting for Miami with Manny Diaz.
Yeah, Mirabal wanted to be here badly.
So before I get to that, though, does any part of this, Mike, and I don't know that I want to go uneasy, I just, it makes me pause for a second, because I do not want to be the guy as everyone hopes and roots and celebrates, who poo-poos the decision or criticizes it, when we'll all know soon enough in 3 or 4 years whether this was the right thing. The question I wanted to ask you, as Mario Cristobal comes in and does the U with his hands and flies in on a private plane.
He also did the C for Columbus in the very same photo shoot on Jose Mas's plane.
Yes, on a private plane. Okay, on a private plane. Some of this feels Maximum Miami, and one of the ways it feels Maximum Miami is the last month has felt like basically the night in the club when someone drinks too much and just makes decisions without thinking of the consequences. Basically, you conjured out of nowhere Miami having $8 million a season for a coach. That is not something that has ever existed. You could have had Mario Cristobal. I'm not kidding you here when I say you could have had Mario Cristobal maybe a few years ago for 5 years, $3 million.
Oh, below that. Yeah, the market has gone up since then.
But 5 years, no, I'm saying 5 years total $3 million. I'm not saying $3 million a year. Yeah, I'm saying 5 years, $600,000 a year, you could have had Mario Cristobal. I'm not even joking.
Yeah, as head coach, he wasn't really like a true head coach candidate back then. He was surrounded by, he was flocked to by this Miami staff during the golden years, and Mario Cristobal had no interest in working with Al Golden and Blake James. To your point about the money has always been there. They just never asked. It is that ridiculous. The money has been there. Now, U Health Medical Systems operating at $400 million in revenue, that certainly helps, but they're not, I don't know the machinations of how they pull money. I just know the University of Miami has had a lot of money for a long time to pump into this football program, and they just haven't done it because there wasn't an athletic director really leading the charge and begging for it. There wasn't a football coach strong enough to saber rattle and make sure that people gave to this. The boosters are fine. They've always kind of been there. We have John Ruiz, who's now kind of like over a pandemic, potentially the richest person in Florida. The money is legit, but is he hasn't gone public with his company yet, so it's the expectation is that he's going to be, and that's why that's the overnight nature of it. I know people are kind of curious about that one individual, the wealthy lawyer that is going to be the money behind a lot of these moves, particularly for the staff, and is now talking about a stadium site, which I find patently absurd, but it gets people excited, and you need people like John Ruiz if you want to compete.
Patently absurd, the Coral Gables High School 50,000-seat stadium that they're talking about?
Number one, if you've ever tried to redesign a kitchen in Coral Gables, you know how painstaking a process that is, 10 months of permits. The site, he wants to move Coral Gables High out of Coral Gables High into a new location and put the stadium there, which is a residential location. It's just, it's flatly not going to happen. But I think Miami really needs vision right now. I think Miami could go for some harebrained schemes and ideas because it's been, for us to just sit here and be like, that's impossible. Who's this idiot? As plausible as that is for this specific scenario, I just think we need less of that. That was just the attitude with Blake James. Why even try? It's a no. And cool, someone has insane ideas, and maybe we can talk them down a few pegs and move them a couple miles west. You don't even need it, honestly. Hard Rock Stadium, in terms of facility, when that stadium is full, when the team is good, you have ESPN Game Day producers saying it's the second loudest venue they've ever heard in their entire life. It's a world-class stadium. It's hosting several world-class events, World Cup, F1, NFL. So I actually think Hard Rock is perfect and a great atmosphere if the team is just any good.
I do want to slightly push back, though, on the notion that the administration has kind of just had these millions of dollars lying around and I've only just come to realize, hey, we can spend those. Like, Mark Richt would have brought an SEC-level standard to the program and what the facilities entail and demanding more out of administration.
He poured his own millions into building better facilities.
Like, I'm sure when Mark Richt was hired, like, he could have had a conversation with some higher ups and like, hey, can we get some more money? Like, I do think that the institutional, you're just going to get a no. Like, it's on the institution to say, we're going to start saying yes if you ask for stuff.
If Miami hired Mark Richt 10 years prior, Miami probably would have a sixth national title. because Mark Richt would have gotten those resources. Mark Richt was at the end of his rope. Mark Richt pumped his own money into that indoor practice facility. No matter how much credit Blake James wants to get for it happening on his watch, Mark Richt pumped his own money into that. Mark Richt just simply did not have the energy beyond the first year and a half. He was wearing it.
And for those of you who don't know, diagnosed with Parkinson's since. Yeah. So God knows what was happening.
No, it's not a shot. Yeah, I'm sorry.
No, I just want people to know in the event that they don't. He loves the University of Miami. He was committed to the University of Miami. He's a deeply religious man, a man of deeply, deeply built morals of family and faith. And he got here, cared about the University of Miami, but we don't know how physically sick he was at the end to just up and quit one day at the end while he was still building it.
I think he's the best thing to happen to the University of Miami over the last 15 years, and people may just want to remember the end where everyone was screaming, fire your son, but you saw what anybody who was remotely a proven commodity that knew how to operate and compete with the big dogs, no pun intended, Miami had its best year in 2017, and it kind of felt exciting down here. That 2017 run where they could have been in the college football playoff if they just merely beat Pitt, I that was so great. And that was Mark Richt at the end. You're getting Mario Cristobal now at his absolute prime.
Does it not cause any of you a little hiccup of hesitancy? Never mind just the absurdity of private plane, buyout over here, buyout over there, Mario Cristobal suddenly worth $8 million a year when you really could, when he was fired as the FIU coach, had gotten him at a tenth that price. Does it not?
He would have failed.
Does it not strike you?
He might fail.
He might still fail.
Yes,
potentially, but look.
Does it not strike you at all, though? Because you just advocated for harebrained schemes. You just said any harebrained scheme.
No, I advocated for not saying no anymore. Not operating for no. And I know you're trying to lay the groundwork for maybe picking apart, like, is Mario Cristobal the right guy? Let me tell you, Mario Cristobal has 3 conference championships, 2 conference coach of the years, 2 national championships as a player in which he played under Jimmy Johnson and Dennis Erickson. He coached under Nick Saban. While he was coaching under Nick Saban, he won the National Recruiter of the Year. He has 2 conference championships at Oregon recently. He actually did something that might seem impossible around these parts. Beat Wisconsin in a bowl game. He won the Rose Bowl doing so. Mario Cristobal is proven. Mario Cristobal is a maniac about recruiting. And if you recruit and you fence up the state of Miami and you've already seen the benefits in recruiting, and I'm not the biggest recruiting guy, but people are turning just because Manny Diaz isn't here. And even more people are turning because Mario Cristobal is. He's keeping the kids and he's flipping others. And he got the transfer portal. Miami's going to have the talent. And I happen to know that Mario Cristobal is trying and endeavoring to put together a massively talented staff, a hugely talented staff. And for all of Mario Cristobal's
Brady's in play, correct?
100% Joe Brady is in play. It was fortuitous. I don't understand what Carolina was doing.
It's a bad coach.
It is my understanding that Matt Rhule needed a scapegoat because Dave Tepper is kind of a maniac. And I thought Joe Brady did a really great job with the pieces he had in Carolina. He was down to Cam Newton at quarterback. He lost his best offensive weapon. What do you want him to do? Joe Brady is a Miami guy. Joe Brady would have been like my 6th leading candidate for head coach down here, even though he hasn't done it in his past. He doesn't like recruiting. You don't have to worry about that here in Miami. If Miami gets Joe Brady to run the offense, and we're talking about some of the names on defense and strength and conditioning, he's working to build an incredible staff, which Mario Cristobal, I will give to you, absolutely needs because the book on him is deserved. In-game coaching. What are you going to do? How is he going to make adjustments for you? So he needs a good staff.
That's not the part I'm questioning.
There's no doubt that when you talk about Cristobal, the starting point is recruiting. And before he ever wins a game, he needs to win Miami. He needs to win the backyard. And Schnellenberger talked about that 3 generations ago. Jimmy Johnson stressed that, winning the backyard, keeping the local kids. In terms of money, somebody at UM, and maybe it was started at the president, somebody said, if not now, when? You have the perfect nexus of just the right coach and a star AD who helped build Clemson. You have just the right coach AD combination. If not now, when? If you're not going to spend now and go all in, this is the end game for Miami. If you can't win with Cristobal and this and Radakovich, who are you going to win with? This is it. This is the end game.
Jimmy Johnson tweets out, welcome home. Again, a private jet for Mario Cristobal. And the part, Stugatz,
you kind of need one from Eugene.
Do you want to elaborate? Yeah, not a lot of direct flights from Eugene to South to Opa-locka
that's
Airport.
Right. Lot of people were saying, man, that's a really good job in Oregon. It's not easy to succeed in Oregon. They need all that Nike flash. They need all those futuristic facilities. Name me the direct flight to Oregon.
You say it's not easy to win in Oregon, and I would say it is easy to win National Recruiter of the Year at Alabama. I would say
the school kind of recruits itself. I mean, it does, Mike.
Yeah, but you're saying that because of guys like Mario Cristobal. If Alabama wasn't down here recruiting at that level until Mario Cristobal established the template.
But when he left to go to Oregon, did the recruiting drop off? No. I mean, the school kind of recruits itself. Well, Nick Saban kind of recruits himself.
So, guys, when he left to Oregon, he was stealing a lot of South Florida guys. Okay. When he left to Oregon, he was still putting in top 10 classes. When you go to a place like Alabama and you're leading the recruiting charge, you're also training people. You show them the playbook. And because of the recruits he brought in, Alabama got more and more successful, which makes it a lot easier for a program like that to recruit. When you're like, we're the defending national champions. You're always going to be in the college football playoff. It's built on the back of the recruiting base that he built. He absolutely was a game changer for their recruiting program.
It is fair, though, if Canes fans have questions about the hire. I know everyone's excited, okay? But it is fair to ask. Is Mario Cristobal a great coach? He's 62-60 for his career.
This is not the part I'm interested in doing. When Greg Cody says, if not now, when? My only question is, the only one I have is, does anyone else find it a little uneasy that Miami didn't decide to do any of this until a month ago? And it sort of reminds me of the year the Marlins went all in on free agency. All of a sudden, they're chasing Pujols. They just up and decide a month ago out of nowhere. You know what? First time in 20 years that we're real. Well, I shouldn't say that because of Mark Richt. But we went cheap on the coaches with Al Golden, with Manny Diaz, with Randy Shannon. And they just decide a month ago, okay, never mind about that. And then they do the most Miami thing ever. Get me the best available Cuban. To replace the other best available Cuban.
But Mike is telling you why that happened. It was an AD problem, and that problem seems to be fixed.
Yeah. And Herbie.
It wasn't just that, because the school had always operated one way. Miami is a historical fluke, and they never really paid attention, and they never had to give the resources that other prestigious programs gave, because in your own backyard, you'd get most of the kids. But now with private jets and teleconferencing and real resources being poured into big-time college football over the last 20 years, Mario Cristobal was a part of that at Alabama, the world has gotten a lot smaller, and it's harder to keep those kids. And Miami, it took 15 years. It took stuff like Kirk Herbstreit's College Game Day diatribe to really affect change. But Miami finally got the message. It's growing pains. It's a lot slower than we'd like.
I think part of the reason it happened quickly, and it did, and Mike, the Goldenest Kane, correct me if I'm wrong, everything didn't turn irrevocably on Manny Diaz until the FSU loss, until the way they lost that game. That's when it became untenable to keep him.
Yeah, it's a little frustrating that they genuinely like Manny Diaz, and I do think that the school believes this too, and I believe it, because Manny Diaz has to be looking from the sideline saying, now you want to give the athletic program these resources. He could have done more to lead in that direction too. He's not the recruiting alpha that Mario Cristobal is either. He didn't make chicken salad, right? But I understand why everyone's questioning why this happened overnight. I am too. The second I got off the sidelines and into the game, I was asking questions, and I kept getting met with no. I don't know what led to that outside of they had always been successful operating a certain way, and college football changed, and they were very slow to change with it.
Let's request Frank. I'd like to talk. It's been a while since
Dr.
we
Julio
talked.
Dr. Frank?
To, yes.
He doesn't do much talking, but we can request
it's him. Been a long time since we talked. I don't think we've talked to,
We talked to Shalala.
Yeah, but I'd like to talk to Frank to see what happened here, because it seems a real absence of leadership that Kirk Herbstreit could alert the president of the university
yeah.
to the issues that Miami fans have been complaining about across two decades.
Absence of leadership. That in trying to search for the answers, you have them. Dr. Frank is not an athletics guy.
Let's request him, though. I'd like to ask him some of these questions. I'd like to see what it is and how it is that that arrived on his doorstep and where the hell he's been.
But also, you'd have to imagine that going back to the 80s and when it began, this has been an institutional culture, right? The institution has said, we don't really need to try that hard at this football thing. And it isn't until you reach breaking point after breaking point after breaking point and your kind of public reputation is that of national embarrassment because your football program is losing by 4 touchdowns on national television every big game that it's in. The only reason or the only way that it's a concern into the future is if they try this and they go, well, this wasn't worth it, and they go back to being the program that they were before. But if this is a genuine sea change, and if Cristobal doesn't work, you buy him out and you get the next big college football coach that's available, and you keep doing this until you return to glory, I can't see a problem with it. It's not like the Marlins, where it always kind of felt like that's a finite pool of money that was going to dry up pretty quickly.
It's not our money, so however much it costs shouldn't concern us at all. Greg, you know the history of this program. This is the first time they've done anything like this.
It is. It is. I mean, when you look back on it, I don't have all the stats in front of me. Miami's never been on the top tier of paying. Dennis Erickson wasn't the highest paid coach in the country.
It was always the school makes the coach. The yes. coach doesn't make the school. We will go get Jimmy Johnson from Podunk U. We will get Dennis Erickson from Podunk U. They're not the hottest. They were not the available hottest candidates. They were good candidates that were largely unknown. They were not this. Not never mind the spending. The name. They never got the name. Mark Richt wasn't the most coveted candidate, Mike. He was coveted, but he wasn't top tier. We got to break the bank. There are going to be people competing for this person.
Miami got lucky with Mark Richt. He was pushed out for some of the, like, Georgia kind of saw the writing on the wall in terms of his energy and his appetite for operating with those expectations. And he was a Miami alum. And that was a cool thing for him to do later in his career. I think Mario Cristobal, I know if we're just saying, if we're fully empowered and we have all these resources, Lane Kiffin's a better coach. But Mario Cristobal was such a perfect candidate to get this done. You're asking why the money is there? In part because Mario Cristobal was the target. Because of his connections to Columbus High School down here, the right people got engaged. That high school has a very proud alumni base that is very wealthy, very powerful, and many of them sit on the board of trustees at the University of Miami. It was this candidate that got a lot of people off the sidelines, into the game, and engaged. And really weeded out a toxic culture within that board of trustees that had a lot of power that was just this loser mentality. I had a fellow booster tell me that, I think it was Jesse Marks, the former deputy AD. Is that true, Jesse Marks? It was Jesse.
I think Trump. So, yeah.
Yeah. They were talking to him after one of these embarrassing primetime games. And this is a person that's reporting directly to Blake James. And this person told that booster, you need to stop thinking about us like we're Florida or Alabama. You need to start thinking about us like we're Vanderbilt. That's a mentality.
Man.
That was a mentality. Toxic.
Vanderbilt?
Toxic.
The Commodores.
This was the leaders. This was the attitude. That's why it took this long.
Roy, I appreciate you laughing there. What are you laughing at? Are you laughing at
Vanderbilt?
Can't we at least be Stanford?
Aim higher.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces. Fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Stanford undressed Mario Cristobal in Oregon this year.
A lot of people like to isolate.
I don't know. Does overtime count as an undressing? Does an overtime? Stanford won. Won 3 or 4 games, so maybe it was. But when you lose in overtime, do you feel undressed? Put that on the poll, Chris, at Levitard Show. I have a backup question for you too, because I think it demands exploration. Your first words, the first 10 minutes,
what happened
of this show was just to call Joe Brady a bad coach.
He's not a good coach. I'm tired of hearing about Joe Brady. Joe Brady was brought to Carolina to be a quarterback whisperer and to fix Sam Darnold. Now, he didn't, you know, it wasn't his decision to go and get Sam Darnold, but once you got him, it's your job to fix him. He did nothing. He was terrible. And I don't want to hear about Cam Newton either, okay?
He did nothing. We were talking about...
The only reason they got Sam Darnold was because Joe Brady couldn't fix... I mean, they got Cam Newton was because Joe Brady couldn't fix Sam Darnold.
You spent 2 years telling us that Sam Darnold was trash.
Yeah.
And then when Carolina was healthy, Sam Darnold was a revelation. Then they started getting hurt. He's had Teddy Bridgewater, P.J. Walker, Sam Darnold, and Cam Newton to work with,
right.
And you're just totally overlooking the overpowering greatest team ever possibly in college football that he ran the offense for.
Who's that?
Joe Brady!
LSU!
Joe Burrow was already a good quarterback.
Listen, no, he wasn't! He was fine. Average.
We had no idea. He was recruited to some of the top schools in the country.
Had to leave Ohio State because he was like, I'm not playing here. And his first season at LSU was pretty average. Joe Brady is absolutely a brilliant offensive mind. You're just pointing to Sam Darnold, who's out hurt right now. They're on their fourth quarterback in the last year and a half.
Besides Joe Burrow, what quarterback has he made great?
He's like 31 years old.
Name another.
Stukants. Like, how much worse is this going to get over the next 15 years where you just go to Joe Brady, bad coach, and then
you don't know he's a good coach.
He's a kid.
That's all I'm saying. Yeah.
He doesn't have a resume, Stukants, really.
This is what I know. He's not a bad coach, okay?
Somewhere in between.
You can say to me, you don't know if he's a good coach, even though he, you know, helmed the most impressive offense and college football team.
Good wide receiver.
I've ever seen, and coached half a season in the NFL.
I don't know. I can't believe you. You're just saying Sam Darnold, and you're ignoring Christian McCaffrey's injury.
Answer my question, though. How much worse is this going to get over how he ages? Because
he's so bad that he'll probably talk me into a lot of bets that I'm going to lose because that's just that attitude.
But if he's already a Joe Brady bad coach because he's just got to take it off to the extremes, how much worse is that going to get as the atmosphere changes, more people have takes, and he's going to feel the need to keep up? And so what's it going
to
be?
That's not what I'm doing. Like, I don't feel any need to keep up.
I'm just saying,
I'll slap down my resume against anybody.
There you go.
Exactly,
yes.
Greg.
Damn right.
21 years, 2 decades, man.
2 decades.
Man, keeping up.
I'm
they need to keep up with me.
Joe Brady, bad coach is not good analysis.
Okay. You're probably right.
It's just,
lazy.
The thing is, you did it last week to Matt Rhule. You made Matt Rhule.
Oh, he's not a good coach.
But you made him the quarterback whisperer at Temple.
Sometimes these offensive coordinators that people think's the next big thing flop. I'm not saying that he isn't a bad, but we don't know he's this, like, you know.
I will also do, in Stugatz's defense, I was listening to an episode of the Tapeheads podcast earlier this year, and they were saying that Joe Brady's offense was a bit predictable.
Them.
That's right.
I'm going to say it's got to be a bit predictable when you got Chuba Hubbard and P.J. Walker.
For sure. And just because he's bad in the pros doesn't mean he's bad in college. Like, he can go right back to college and coordinate another 49 points a game offense with Tyler Van Dyke.
Yeah, and absolutely. Okay. Tyler Van Dyke, weapons returning like Jalen Knighton and a transfer portal where players have a one-time transfer, no penalty. I think Miami's very well positioned. And to your credit, you actually had more than bad coach with Mario Cristobal. You flashed his record, which was obviously weighted down by his time at FIU, because in terms of successful Power 5 coaches, winning percentage, he's got a better one than Brian Kelly.
35-13 at Oregon. You're right.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
Stugatz, when you did the fingers in circles, take it up with them, and you leaned back in your chair, who's the them you want me
whatever
to take
whatever podcast Whittingham was listening to.
So just you, with Shoesins on that one.
Bobby.
You just want me to take it up.
Shoes.
With them.
You should. I mean, take it out. You wouldn't treat them the same way you're treating me right now.
I don't think they would say bad coach as the only thing they say in 10 minutes about a coach. No,
they did, but they backed it up with facts.
The fact that you don't know anything and dismiss someone as a bad coach.
That's one of my favorite pods. That's where I got it from.
Here's what you need to know about Joe Brady outside of his track record, which is actually successful that you're diminishing, is that Joe Brady on the open market, if this happened a month ago, I'm not sure Miami's in play for him because every school would want him as their offensive coordinator. Every school.
Bad coach.
Stugas is right. I think a lot of people think Joe Brady only got where he is because of his last name. You know, there's that symbiotic thing where they assume
you think
you're
getting
Tom, right? Exactly. Right. There's got to be some connection. What's this guy got besides the last name? That kind of thing.
He's so right.
It's not even a last name with a coaching pedigree, though. Like, what do you know?
It's football. Yeah, you know.
It's why Brady Hoke was hired.
Yeah. That's right. That's exactly right.
I saw.
That's why any Brady's hired.
This is what I love about this dumb game of coaching. Magic shells. I saw Jim McElwain trying to make his way back up some Mac sideline, and I saw Brady Hoke out there somewhere. Brady Hoke somewhere.
He's got the best punter in the country, Matt Areza. You want to watch that dude punt the football 70 yards at San Diego State.
Brady Hoke out of nowhere. I'm watching television.
Back at San Diego State.
But he was the hot candidate at Michigan before Harbaugh. And yeah. McElwain was the hot candidate. What happens with these hot candidates is when they flame out, they end up in the MAC, and then they do what? They do what Bill O'Brien and Cristobal did. They just go into the feeder system over at Nick Saban's place and end up with an $8 million contract where failure gets buffed and shined and turns into $8 million a year.
I think that historically in college football, it can go sideways quick on someone that's coming up from a group of five school going to a power five school. You hear a lot of small time talk. Billy Napier, I think, is a good coach and a good hire for Florida, but he's talking about, we don't need blue chippers. My goal is to see the three-star guys and, you know, really boost them. Those are the ones that you can really have concerns about and say, I just need to see it happen. A power five guy with success going to another power five program, that usually turns out to be successful.
Greg, you wrote a column about this morning. What did you say? Just win now. Win big. Gotta win, win, win,
here,
win,
here
win.
I told you. Now or if not now,
if
when?
If not now, right.
No, I mean, it's what I said before. This feels like the end game for Miami. This feels like they are going all in on a coach, I almost said GM, on a coach AD combination such as they've never had before. And when Mark Richt was hired, people were excited, and he had a resume, but he was also an older coach who was known for a lot of, you know, at Georgia. He
couldn't win the big one.
That's harsh, but it's accurate. This guy, Cristobal, granted, you know, he's ending on a terrible Pac-12 championship.
I mean,
loss,
dragged twice by the Utah coach.
I will say, that's, you know.
I don't expect any of us to know a lot about Oregon football. It's hard to watch Oregon football here in the South, but
Their quarterback this year, Sedano was texting me. He did a bunch of their games, and he was saying that it was smoke and mirrors in Oregon and that their quarterback is basically Malik Rozier, has been this season, and what they did at Ohio State was a big, stunning surprise, and what happened against Utah evidently wasn't, even though it is obvious, Mike, when you watched those two games, obviously the score tells you the same thing, but there was nothing fluky about that. If they played 100 times, Utah would beat them by four touchdowns every time they played.
Utah's a damn good team, and I'm not overly poring over Oregon Duck injury reports, but it's my understanding that they were a really beat up team, and this was a good year. A lot of them are seeing the bright side with Mario Cristobal leaving because they were frustrated at times with in-game management, and I understand that program's been doing a lot of winning over the last few years, and Oregon's a place that it's just like Chip Kelly, fine. Mike Bellotti, fine. They make coaches. That program makes coaches the way that Miami used to make coaches.
I will say Mario Cristobal has won some big ones in his career. It feels like the concern with him doesn't win the small one. I don't feel like that's a cliche that gets thrown around enough. Mario Cristobal doesn't win the small one.
Can we? People are going to get
like that.
People are going to get frustrated by the game management there, unless somebody corrects some of what I've seen at Oregon.
Probably going to happen here occasionally. They're going to lose some small ones. The problem with Miami over the last few years is they lost a lot of small ones. There were how many times over the last 15 years have we seen a school rush the field because they beat the ghosts of Miami?
Greg Cody saying the FSU was the breaking point, the FSU game. I mean, La Tech and FIU, Greg.
That wasn't the breaking point. What got people really engaged this year, oddly enough, because they turned out to be a really good team, was the Michigan State loss.
Mm-hmm.
Because you were coming off of a squeaker against Appalachian State, which also turned out to be a pretty good team. They were playing in their conference championship game. Entering that, they had only lost two games this season. Half their games they lost to Manny Diaz's Miami. That got people really upset because here it is, the national window at noon, and again, we're embarrassing ourselves. We're not playing hard. It was just the same shit that you'd seen from Miami.
Got somewhere. Run over by Kenneth Walker.
Oh, but it wasn't.
And it was, I'd never seen like the fan base and the boosters, and that's a more prestigious program over the last 20 years than you've had. Well, 15 years because they've won a national title. But everybody was outraged, and all the seeds were kind of planted.
I think that analysis, it's funny to look at it after the season's played out, though, because that was shit analysis by everybody watching. Michigan State, those were not broken tackles because Miami was necessarily bad at tackling, though they ended up being that in subsequent games. Those were broken tackles because nobody broke tackles in the sport like Kenneth Walker did this year, and he proved that over the next five games he played after Miami.
But that's kind of interesting. What Mike is saying is that day needed to happen. For everyone to kind of wake up and realize, hey, something needs to change.
But what I'm saying is the analysis was bad. Michigan State was good, and so was their running back.
Yes,
like,
very good.
But Miami's tackling was disastrous. Miami had players in position to stop Kenneth Walker. I know Kenneth Walker is very good, but Miami should never be the type of program to throw their hands up and say, well, that running back from that Big Ten school is just too good for us. And that had happened in several bowl games over the course of this 21st century program.
Can we talk about how good-looking Cristobal is and just how good he looks in a polo on a sideline?
Yeah.
I mean, he's got some Dan Campbell in him, the way he prowls a sideline.
Yeah. He's a prowler, and he looks good. I'm glad that he opted for polo because in the early days of FIU, he was sweating through a lot of button-down T-shirts on the sidelines of the Orange Bowl.
It was a great picture of Mario in the private jet, the PJ. Like, if you take a picture and you're the new coach of UM, you need to look like that. You need to make the U sign, and you need to have a pad and a pencil. You need to. I mean, you do.
It's kind of cool that you have stuff. He's going to have his introductory press conference at 10 a.m. local time. You already have stuff to point to and get really excited about. If you follow recruiting, he's already put in the work. He has already made the calls. He has been the alpha recruiter that he's reputed to be already. And we all agree, it starts with the talent. Well, it really starts with the mindset because that helps get the talent.
I just got goosebumps.
The mindset is right.
We're back.
And you have the best talent recruiter, I think, in the nation.
Mike needs to say it.
I am not too old that I don't remember how excited everyone around here was with the first Al Golden press conference when he won the first press conference.
100%.
Or Randy Shannon's first recruiting class.
1,000%. Yeah.
Nobody wore an orange tie like Al Golden.
1,000%. 1,000%. I had no idea what the football program was working against. I had heard it and been like, it can't possibly be that bad.
Do you remember Al Golden had like a book that he brought that he wrote several things in that he wanted to show what his way to progress was written in book form.
He toasted when Blake James got let go, Al Golden. What it was just the program wasn't supported because they never felt like they had to. And what are you talking about? We went to the national championship just 5 years ago would be. And then, no, what? We went to the national championship just 10 years ago. What? We went to the national championship just 15 years
ago. Where is Al Golden now? Is he Detroit Lions tight end or offensive line coach?
I think he's had another NFL team. He might be in Cincinnati.
Cincinnati.
And Randy Shannon is the coordinator at UCF. Is he at UCF?
He's in Cincinnati.
And where's Manny? And I do remember telling you, because Mack Brown was no fan of what happened with Manny Diaz and those defenses at Texas before he got hired here. But This is a string of bad hires they're trying to correct. And I think what Mike Ryan is telling you again and again and again is that while this might be the quote unquote perfect candidate at the right time, the thing that's creating the hope, and there is no way to diminish this part of it, is Miami has announced that they're in the big game now, that they're playing at the high stakes game. Maybe they don't figure out the culture. Maybe they don't figure out the athletic department. Maybe they don't win football games. But what they've announced to everybody is, we want to play in the high stakes game of big business football. Now that all the rules have changed, and it costs $90 million if you want one of these coaches. And I think to Whittingham's point, yeah, if it doesn't work in 3 or 4 years, if this is the game you're in and you're staying in this game, you will get this fixed eventually. You'll get
if
it.
If you keep spending,
You'll get it fixed eventually if you're going to be one of the big players and announce to everyone in college football that, hey, we intend on, and this is the most important part, really, at USC when they were doing it, or Alabama, we intend on getting your kids to the pros. We're the factory where you need to go if you want to get a pre-collegiate education or a pre-graduate education on what it is to be in the pros.
Yep. Another reason why Mario Cristobal is a perfect candidate. I mentioned that he got the right people engaged. Look at Oklahoma State. Look at Oregon. Historically, I know Oklahoma State has had some success, but not really programs that you should point to and say, well, of course, they have the resources. They have their one guy. They have Phil Knight. They have T. Boone Pickens, right? Miami has never had that one guy. They are a very small student body, 17,000 students. More reason why an on-campus stadium for a bunch of students that don't go to the game is a little absurd. But now they have John Ruiz, who in a few months' time is probably is in the conversation as the wealthiest person in the state of Florida. And he wants to be known like Phil Knight, like T. Boone
Billy
Pickens.
Corbin's got questions about him, does he not?
Billy, yeah, well, you can ask those questions about to Billy Corbin. I'm not here to poo-poo someone that is finally here to game change and wants the spotlight and the attention. And is it extra Miami? Sure. Is Miami extra Miami? Absolutely. If you get one of those people engaged, you are in, and as long as he's supporting this program, you're in the game, I think.
Greg Cody, why did you roll your eyes at the mention of Billy Corbin?
Well, I mean, man, Billy Corbin's got questions about this guy. Come on. I mean, you know.
Billy Corbin's got questions about everybody.
Everybody. He's got questions about
everybody.
He's a
very inquisitive gentleman.
Yes, to a fault, perhaps.
You want him to leave this one alone is what you're saying,
Greg. You know, come on.
Greg gets it. This guy gets it.
Yeah, I get it.
It's a funny, to a fault, perhaps, coming from a lifelong journalist is funny.
Like too many that, questions like from a journalist.
Greg Cody, from a guy who's made his entire livelihood on the asking of questions.
You should have questions,
it's
Greg.
To a fault, yes. Well, Billy Corbin's primary objection to Cody, who cheerleaded David Sampson getting that stadium, is that Greg Cody doesn't ask enough questions as a journalist.
Well, don't get me started on that whole Marlins Stadium thing, because I'm happy to debate it. Look.
No, thank you.
Okay, fine. Okay.
You were ready, though.
I was right. I was right.
Greg is still angry at Billy Corbin for what he did at the celebrity roast to him. That's all it is.
He dragged you at the roast.
He dragged everybody at the roast. He was pretty good at the roast, by the way.
He was great at the roast.
He was the best.
Billy Corbin, and I know where he's headed. And Billy, para. It's just enough. Let us have a week before you're out here like trying to potentially poke holes in finally a savior booster that wants to spend his money on this program. Not something that you do, Billy Corbin. Yeah. He's like, who knows a billionaire lawyer? I've already seen him lay the groundwork. He didn't make his money from being a lawyer. He has an algorithm. That is a mining algorithm that is going public via SPAC. And the second that it does go public, he is in line to be among the wealthiest people in the state of Florida.
But is he legitimate? Ask those questions. Leave those questions to Billy Corbin.
It's a super reckless question to just throw out there, but it's one that you're doing with experience. Just being, I'm anybody that wants to spend money in Miami. I'm like, what's this
guy's
deal?
That's all. That's this.
You don't care where the money comes from,
Mike. No, wait.
Of course I do.
We started this. Okay. When I saw Cristobal on a private plane.
Jose Mas is playing.
I understand, but when I saw Cristobal on a private plane, that's not the Miami I went to. Like, that is not the school I have covered all my life.
Good coaches flying your coach
and
on Spirit.
They should fly. Yes.
Hang over seat Wagon.
That is it. Stugatz would go to coach and be like, all these seats are mine. I'm coach.
That's right. Jimmy Johnson hitchhiked from Oklahoma State.
I get all the seats in coach. I did look at that, and I, whenever somebody is spending a lot of money trying to look rich in Miami, this is something that I do to anybody. It's not just this guy. It's not recklessly going after Ruiz, even though I am uncomfortable with how many of my Cuban brethren are on that board of trustees with power, because I know my people and they cannot be trusted with some of this power. Like, I know my people. I know my people.
You just be careful, all right? Be careful. There's a corner of the room that's here just shouting, take it easy, bro.
I was telling them yesterday. I was telling Tony and Luis yesterday that corner of the room is going to be La Esquina de Chusmeria. Like, those are the guys right there.
I love
there.
That.
Like, I told them to open a little window and start selling stuff out of it, whether it's spare tires or coffee. Like, I think they should just open the window and start selling something out of La Esquina de Chusmeria.
It's like the two old guys in the Muppets, only they're Papi Chulos.
The board of directors that you speak of, Mike, how Cuban is it? How
not Cuban enough, honestly, because the Cuban guys actually got this shit fixed.
You want more Cubans?
You want to call them into question, and they may get this spectacularly wrong, and Miami has a track record and all that, but the right guys got engaged and they got shit done.
We might get it wrong, but we're going to get it wrong big.
Big.
It's all that counts.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.